Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the Sacramento Regional Championships. First off, the fact that two first-time regionals players, that's right, two players who were competing in their first ever regional championships made it all the way to the finals of the tournament this weekend. Crazy enough that one person can do it, but the fact that it's two first-time players meeting in the finals, we're going to break that down and give our thoughts about that, a little bit of discussion around that in the community this past weekend. We're going to, of course, have Guess That Flavor Text, everyone's favorite segment of the podcast. I always appreciate it when someone comes up to me at a regionals and says, just so you know, Chip, Guess That Flavor Text really is my favorite segment of the podcast. And then, yeah, we're going to close out by going over the results of Sacramento Regionals. So the meta, how it shaped up, what decks won, what decks did well, some things that are surprising, and then some things that we could have expected. And then, of course, we are going to have our additional 30-minute bonus episode exclusive over to our Patreons over on Patreon. If you want to get a little bit of extra content from me and Azul here, podcast related every single week, you can go check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/uncommonenergypodcast. You get access to all the old episodes, the old bonus episodes, and the new one we do every single week. My name is Chip Ritchie, joined here as always by my friend and co-host, coming off a pretty strong finish in Sacramento, Azul GG. What's up, Azul? How you doing? How you feeling after your top eight?
I'm pretty good, Chip. Yeah, feeling good. It was nice to get the top eight. Of course, had like a little bit of a slow start to the season, I guess, with, I don't know, what did I get? Two drops. So getting a top eight was cool. And I expect to get quite a few more throughout the season, or that's the plan anyways. I just copied, basically just copied the list from Raymond Long, who got one Peoria Regional. Just changed one card, cut a Beach Court for an Escape Rope. Escape Rope was pretty good with Kyogre, and it worked out fine. Beach Court probably would have been fine as well, to be honest. Don't really, one way or the other, didn't really matter too much, I don't feel like. So Beach Court would have been fine. Escape Rope was cool as well. Stadiums in general actually weren't that as, or felt not as good, because there was so much Lugia. Stadiums aren't staying in play against Lugia very often, because either they're bumping it with the Lugia's attack, or they're putting their own stadium in play. But if you also like bump paths up against the path, matchups can be cool as well, but you're like favored against Mew and Maridon, so it doesn't really matter too much either, I guess.
Yeah. How did you feel about the deck all said and done? Obviously you made top eight, but you know, objectively, yeah, Feeling like it was still the best play for the tournament for you?
I mean, it was solid. The meta is like really open, and there's just like a lot of good decks. Obviously, Lugia kind of overall dominated this tournament. But if you ran it back, I think, you know, you could have seen a different result for sure. Could have seen more Lost Box and Cut. Could have seen just other stuff in Cut, to be honest. The Cut was kind of lacking in diversity. It was like two Lost Zone decks, both Ogres, one Guardi, one Arceus deck, and then the four Lugia. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, if you run the tournament back overall, like, it could have been a completely different meta. There was definitely some other decks that could have popped up. I guess the biggest thing was, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say. I was going to say, like, the Maridons weren't able to really take advantage of the Lugias, I guess, overall, but Lugia really wasn't very popular, you know? Like, I feel like Lugia players used Lost Box as the stepping stones to get to top eight, and if there's not as much Lugia for Maridon to use as the stepping stones, then the Maridons are just getting stepped on by the Lost Boxes, so I think the way, for the meta percentages, like, it kind of made sense the way it went overall, but yeah, like, yeah, I enjoyed playing Kyogre again, like, the most powerful attack in the game. Using that is always cool. And yeah, it was just a solid deck overall. So yeah, shout out to Raymond, I guess, specifically for the list, basically. And yeah, I was pretty content with it. Would have been content with the two prize Kyogre build as well. Like, I'm not too picky between the two, but I think there was like a slightly better reason to play the Zamazenta build over the two prize build. It was like slightly better.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, congrats on the finish. Overall, super solid. I, of course, was casting in Sacramento, which was a blast. I actually got to cast with Pablo Meza, aka Tablemon, for the first time, and I really enjoyed it. I like getting to do play-by-play casting, which I usually end up doing the analyst role or like the color commentary. It just kind of depends on who I'm paired with. And I don't mind doing either of them, but I really like, I probably prefer slightly doing play-by-play. So that's like what I get to do when I'm with Kyle Sablehouse, because he pretty much only does analyst or color commentary. Pablo also is like only does analyst color commentary. So it was a good mix. I really enjoyed it. Got to cast the finals with him. And yeah, overall, super good time. And then got home last night at like midnight, woke up this morning, went with Brooke and Samuel to the North Carolina State Fair, which was busted, broken, so much fun. Ate some fried food, ate some bad for you sweets, and that's called a successful day at the State Fair right there.
Is that a big thing? Like, I know everyone, like, there's state fairs a lot in states, but like, is it a bigger thing in Carolina?
Yeah, it's like a pretty, I mean, I think pretty much everywhere in the South, it's like a pretty big thing to go to the state fair. Yeah. And then like also just for us, just because the state fair is in Raleigh. So it's like really easy to go to because it's the fairgrounds are like 10 minutes away from where we live or less. So yeah, really easy to, it's like no reason not to go check it out at least one day every year. There was like one year where I think we went, because it lasts for like 10 days or something like that. We went like three times in 10 days. One year, just like
last 10 days.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Is it like, I assume it's bigger on the, is it like two weekends? Is it start on a Friday and then end on a Sunday the next week? Yeah. Okay. Because I assume the weekends are more busy than the weekday.
Usually, yeah, but they do like specials every single day. Like there's like a, like today was senior day. And so we chose to go today, well, mostly because it made sense with like our schedule, but also because we were like, okay, maybe it won't be like as crazy crowded. Cause we have like kind of one rule that we don't go to the state fair on canned food night, because there's one night every single year that the admission into the fair is just you bring canned goods to like donate. And we don't go on that night because it is the most packed. People will go to the grocery store and get like a 50-cent can of beans or something like that, bring it as their admission, and it's just like you're shoulder to shoulder. Brooke got basically run over by a scooter one year canned food night because of how packed it was. It was like a runaway scooter situation. So yeah, we don't go on canned food night. But then after today, there was it was pretty crowded, honestly, for like just first thing in the morning, but it makes sense when you consider it was senior citizen day, right?
Yeah,
that's what they're doing. They're waking up and going to the fair because they get to go for free as well. So Brooke was like halfway through, she was like, I think we're adding another day to the list of days we don't come to the fair.
So if you go to now I'm just like curious, I wonder if that's like a thing that they have at other state fairs too, just different entries for different nights. No, don't go on canned food night, right? And don't go on senior citizen.
I've been to the South Carolina State Fair when I was in college once. Oh, no, it was a county fair. It wasn't even the state fair. But, yeah, man. In the South, we got to find something to do, right?
Yeah.
Not like you big city folk.
Yeah, I don't even know if there was, like, a state fair in Massachusetts. There was the, what was it called? I forget what it was called, but it was, like, where they would do what are they,
like a
kayak races? It was like a kayak race thing, and there was like a, you know, like tents and stuff with food and all that other stuff. I remember what it was called though. I remember going
kayak
to that
kayak races.
Like, yeah, I remember what it was called every year. Hang on, race Boston.
What
is it called? The Charles Canoe Kayak Race.
That's what I found.
Canoe
paddleboston.com.
Dude, I don't remember what it was called. It was decently big, if I remember correctly. It was on the Charles. It was literally down.
Did you compete?
No. We just went to like hug out. I remember just going and hanging out. Because it was kind of like more of like a, it wasn't just the races that were happening. It was kind of like a fair or festival or whatever you want to call it kind of thing. I don't know.
Dude, renting a canoe is expensive. What the heck? That's a lot for renting a canoe. That's got to be like a percentage of the price of like what it costs to buy a canoe.
But how much was it? How much is it?
Like $120
for a day.
Well, I guess I don't know those details. Also, this is for Run of the Charles Sunday, April 26th, 2022. Or sorry, 2020. Well, what are the odds that this did not happen?
Is that
April 2020?
That didn't happen, probably.
And oh gosh, they didn't update it since then. Oh yeah, we're
I guess they stopped. Nothing on the Charles anymore.
Enough of that. And let's get into this week's episode and all the things we have to talk about. Really, mostly just details of Sacramento. And the first thing, which, you know, I think this is a thing that's pretty cool. And it's like good for the game overall, as far as like getting more people interested and joining and wanting to compete in the game. And that is the fact that it was two players competing in their first ever regional championships who made it to the finals of the tournament. We had Nicolo Abate versus Alexander Flatos. Nicolo was playing an Arceus Gyarados VMAX deck, and Alexander playing colorless Lugia V-Star. We'll talk more about like the decks and meta and stuff later on in the episode, but this was, I think, overall something that's just cool, and it's good in general for the growth of the... It's like a good sign for growth of the game, I think, right?
I'm just kind of neutral on it. I just don't think it matters.
Okay.
Like, there's some people who view it as a positive thing. Some people view it as a negative thing. To me, it just, like, doesn't matter. You just had two players who are good at the Pokemon TCG show up and do well at the Pokemon TCG, you know? Like, I don't think it's a sign of anything good or anything bad. I think I'm just really neutral on the whole topic of it. Because, like, you know, people were saying it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. I mean, it's good for them because they got to the finals. Like, but for me, it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's sick. It's just sick that more people are getting into Pokemon. How well they do kind of doesn't matter for the growth of the game, right? But I guess, well, maybe
it gives
for some people
it
looking...
gives someone a benchmark, right? And like, if
on the outside
people...
looking in, mm-hmm. for sure, maybe that could be like, but I don't know. I don't know if it was like going to deter people that, you know, they weren't seeing newer players do well in the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
For like something like, so Alexander, I don't know as much about Nicolo's situation because I didn't get to speak to him, but I spoke to Alexander for a couple minutes before the finals and just asked him like about, you know, his kind of like background in the game and stuff. And it's like, because he had mentioned in one of his interviews that he had played Yu-Gi-Oh! In the past. And it's like, it sounds like he was like a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player for like 6 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. And
I heard
Pokemon like a bit more serious. Like, he said he had played Pokemon on and off in the past. Like, he said he had played Night March to a tournament one time. Like, so that's, you know, back 2016 time frame, right?
Yeah.
But he, you know, was playing in his first regionals here, playing the Lugia, and it like just picked it up kind of more seriously the last few months. And I mean, I got to imagine part of that is due to the increase in prize pool, right? You know, doubling the first place prize, like, just kind of gets more eyes on the game naturally. And so it's like cool to see someone who's like been, I mean, I don't know how successful Alexander was or wasn't in Yu-Gi-Oh! Right. But someone who's like familiar with card games, played other card games. It sounds like he plays One Piece as well. Being able to pick it up and like translate that into Pokemon, and it gives, you know, more reason for, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a kind of a daunting task for someone maybe who is so committed down the path of Yu-Gi-Oh! Magic, One Piece, whatever, to like make a switch over to another card game, right? So it kind of can give you a benchmark that it's like, okay, maybe my skills can translate to this other game and I can actually earn something for doing it too, as opposed to like, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! You get a deck box.
I mean, I think everyone should come play Pokemon. When I hear about what people are winning for like top 8 tournaments and stuff in other card games, so why would you play anything that's not Pokemon, to be honest? If like if that's what your goal is. But I'm not on the other side of the coin either. Like, I'm not saying it's like, I mean, it's a positive thing in terms of like people winning in the Pokemon TCG is how I view it, but I'm not on the other side of the coin either, where like there's a lot of people who are saying negative things about the, you know, the fact that it was two newer players that that were in the finals, right?
And I do like kind of understand the sentiment, and this was like mostly posted by this one person, Sin Carver, who said the winner and finalist of Sacramento Regionals were two players that attended their first regionals.
The last name is it Carver?
Carver. It? That's what I. Carver. I don't know for sure.
I mean, it's European, Carver. So it's tough, but yeah.
Carberg. I don't know.
Carberg.
Winner and finalist of Sacramento Regionals were two players that attended their first regional. I see many people commenting that this is a good thing. Personally, I think this says a lot about Arceus and Lugia archetypes, and I can't wait till they rotate. Can you imagine any sport where you can just show up for the first time and win against some of the best players?
So I think there's a little bit of a, I think this is just like unnecessarily negative from Sen. Not even the initial post so much. This is like kind of, I think, feel like this is Sen not going after the player so much as just kind of like talking about the current state of the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is different. Yeah. But then I guess like the second, Pokemon is not supposed to be chess, right? But I feel like a lot of people like push towards wanting Pokemon to be more like chess, or like draw parallels to something that can be very easily compared to chess. Like the second comment Sen made, I mean, can you imagine a sport where you just show up for the first time and win against some of the best players? Yeah, I can. It's called Pokemon. So like at some point you should just go play chess. And I've been saying that a lot recently on my stream. When
go ahead and get that topics. One off of your, your weekly bingo card of when a Uncommon Energy episode.
Yeah. When I discuss topics and stuff, especially in my stream or like talking to people, at some point you should just go play chess if you want to take away all the things that make card games so much different and more unique than chess, right? They're both strategy games. They're both one-on-one games, but there's a lot of RNG in card games and stuff that's unique and different. You don't really know what to expect every single time. When you sit down to play a game of chess, you're playing black or white and all the pieces do the exact same thing every time. That's not a fine thing for chess, but it's just, you know, those are the differences of the games, right? Obviously, chess is a higher skill ceiling than Pokemon, but, you know, if that's what you're looking for, then Pokemon might not be it for you. I think the idea or the thought process by Sen's initial tweet has more to do with maybe their frustration with the current way the format the way the game's been played, you know, the last couple of years. And I can understand that a little bit, but it feels really negative the way Sen kind of put it out there and phrased it, and the way some other people looked at that and phrased it. And like I said, personally, I don't view it as like an overly, like, I don't think it's a negative thing that the two finalists of this regional is their first regional, but I don't think it's an overly positive thing either. I think it's just kind of neutral. Like, it just doesn't matter. So like the idea of calling out that part of it specifically just feels weird to like take note of both two players in the finals of this regional were this is their first regionals, and I was gonna go for someone else from there and this is like a bad thing, you know what I'm saying? Or like making that a vocal point of why the format is bad. It just feels really, really negative and weird. Instead of just being like, you know, just have their good old vent about how the format's bad and hopefully it gets better with rotation or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I saw some replies to this too of people being like, I mean, it should be cool and kind of what I was saying too. It's like it should be cool and encouraging to players of other card games that their skills can translate over to, you know, Pokemon potentially, right? And
yeah,
but yeah, I agree. I think that I can understand. I agree. Like, it does definitely sound like Sen saying more about the cards and the way they're designed, even in one of these replies, saying like, yeah, just very bad designed cards, IMO, which you can feel like that for sure. But I do feel like, I mean, obviously Lugia is very powerful, like in a vacuum, right? Like, just like, you know, it's got a lot of HP. It has a high damage attack and it lets you cheat extra energy out of play because of what you compare it with its V-star power, right? So I can understand like feeling like something like that is boring, but also at the same time it's unique. Like, there's never been a Pokemon that really can do something like this, right? That pulls things out of the discard pile, that lets you cheat these extra cards into play. And that was actually something we talked about on the stream, how like every single one of the top six decks that we had this weekend are all decks that let you cheat extra energy cards into play. It turns out breaking the rules of the game is pretty strong, right?
Yeah, definitely pretty good.
But another point I'll make, like, see this and think that I don't know. It's like, I think what's maybe Sen is wanting here is just like a Pokemon of the past, right? Which I don't know that we're necessarily going to have again, at least not super soon.
Well, one thing I'll say to that is you always rag on me for bringing this up, but the first regional championships I played in Masters. I also won. And that was in one of the formats that people considered one of the best formats of all time back in 2010. So like, I don't know. Do we just discredit the 2010 format because of that? Like, what is that? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this is like, I also don't think like two new players. I mean, listen, I wouldn't love the idea of the top eight of every Pokemon TCG tournament being just eight random players every single time effectively, right? Yeah. But it's not like that's like a trend we're seeing in the results of tournaments either, right? We're not seeing eight players who showed up to their first regional, which was like theoretically there's going to be more people who are going to their, well, I guess not. There's more people going to their first regional than any other number of regionals they're probably attending at any regional, right?
Yeah.
So theoretically, there'll be more first. If it was truly random, the results of a tournament were truly random, we would just see that consistently over and over again. But we don't see that.
Yeah. And we've also, like, already even this season seen consistency from some players, like Jesse Parker getting second place and then top eight at two regionals in a row. Sawyer Melbourne got top four at this regionals and got top 16 in Pittsburgh, the first regionals of the year. So, like, that's two really solid finishes in a row. Like,
Grant Shen, top eight, one, top 16, this one. Like, there's still plenty of consistency to look at for sure. Like, I don't know. I don't think this is probably more of a standout result. I don't think Lil Regionals this weekend is going to have two first-time regional champion or two first-time regionals attendees in the finals. It probably won't even happen another time this whole year, even if the format was to get, like, quote-unquote worse. So, I don't know. I don't think it's like I said, I don't think it's a negative or a positive. I think it just happened and that's fine. that's how I like look at the situation. It's just, two players showed up, played some Pokemon, did well.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
I could see, but I can't really have that perspective of someone who is on the outside looking in and thinking, can I ever do well in this game? What does it take to do well?
It can definitely seem daunting, I feel like, to people, you know?
Yeah, I could see that, but I just don't have that perspective because I'm not in their shoes. I can't imagine having that perspective. Also, as someone who is as competitive as I am, I can't, like, it's really hard for me to relate to that. So, you could definitely let us know in the comment section, seeing players like Nicolo and Alexander do well, first regional champions for each of them. Is that like a motivation for other people out there to want to prove what they got, go to your first regional championship? I'm sure for some people it is, but like, when I look at it, I just like, I don't think about it as a negative or a positive. It's just like, it is what happened, I guess a little bit of a lame way to look at it in general, to be honest.
I definitely saw that in some of my, like, the quote retweets on my post. There's not a good way to look at quote retweets anymore on desktop, but, I definitely saw a lot of people saying that of like, this is cool. Like now this gives me hope, things like that. Imagine yourself, right? Like what if Magic the Gathering came out and their standard format tournaments, their pro circ what are their tournaments called? Pro Tours?
Pro Tour, yeah.
Pro Tour. But can anyone play in a Pro Tour? They can, right?
You got to get like some kind of invite. You have to get an invite to a Pro Tour.
Well, what's their biggest level of open tournament?
Like a PTQ or something?
Yeah, something like that. So like, what if they announced that like a PTQ, paid out similar to this Pokemon or like double, triple, whatever Pokemon's paying out. Like something that would really incentivize people to play.
I think a PTQ is like a PTQ is like a League Cup. You have to win that or top two that or something to go to.
Well,
like
whatever. Okay, so what if they...
I don't know the levels. There's levels.
What if
for a qualifier?
Oh my gosh.
You're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And they announced, and it would incentivize someone like you who's great at Pokemon to be like, now there's this opportunity. I could make a lot of money playing Magic, but I've got, over a decade of experience playing Pokemon. I don't really know much about Magic, and it's like a game that's existed longer than Pokemon has. I have to imagine it would maybe feel a little like, is this worth really sinking my time into,
I already have my answer for that, so like it's hard for me to consider ever doing anything outside of Pokemon right now, but I guess I kind of see what you're saying. I think it's maybe more of a motivator for like newer players than like players who are just good at other games. I think players who are good at other games, and anyone who's like really good at Pokemon understands that they could go be really good at a different card game. It's just another 1v1 strategy game. Like there really isn't that much more depth to being a top tier Yu-Gi-Oh player, as a top tier Pokemon player, as a top tier Magic player. It's like basically all the same. Like it would take you time to get there. You couldn't just be able to be a top tier Magic player from being a top tier Pokemon player, or vice versa. But you'd be able to get there eventually for sure. Except for chess, because they start when they're like 5 years old. That's too
tough. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. That one would be daunting, right? And you're never going to see someone showing up to their first chess tournament and beating Magnus Carlsen. Like, it's just not happening, right?
It would be funny if it did happen, though. Yeah. That would be insane.
Maybe they would beat Magnus Carlsen if they were wearing a watch. That could be.
That's all you need. Yeah, I'm going to roll up to a chess tournament with a watch. Everyone's going to get tilted. I'm going to get that dub.
If you don't understand the reference.
No, I do.
No, I'm talking to listeners. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I think, to be honest, chess, there's like no money in competitive chess though, compared to what it should be for how big it is. So I don't know if we're winning more money here over here in Pokemon than they are in chess.
We definitely have it pretty dang good compared to like most esports, even like.
Well, fighting games at least, in comparison to like fighting games. I mean, if you're like a pro league player, you're set. But even some.
Or if you're playing like if you're a Fortnite pro, you're probably pretty set too. But like,
I hope so.
That's about it. CSGO, maybe. I don't know. All right. Yeah. Well, you got anything else you want to add about this topic, Azul?
No, yeah, I think it's fine. I think, like, it just felt weird. Like, I think it was, like, people just saw, like, the negative frustrations that people have maybe with the game currently just kind of came out in, like, a bad way. In a way where it almost felt directed at the two finalists, right? I don't think anyone really had anything against them personally. More so maybe where people feel like the skill level is in the game, or where the way some of the decks are piloted in the game, kind of like Sen's tweet seemed to be more focused on that. And it kind of came out in a weird negative way where it kind of felt like it was aimed towards the players. But I don't think anyone has anything against Niccolo or Alexander. And yeah, congrats to them on, you know, both making it to the finals. Pretty sick. Played against Alexander. Alexander's pretty chill. Definitely enjoyed playing against him. So, hopefully they, you know, keep it up, show up to another tournament. Although Alexander got the invite now, so I don't know. Maybe Alexander's going to check out.
He can vibe until it's time for Hawaii, right?
Yeah. Or maybe come through again and win another one. That'd be even sicker. So,
would be pretty dope. All right. Well, with that all being said, we do have to give a quick thanks and shout out to our amazing sponsor, Dragon Shield. Of course, they are our sponsor here on the Uncommon Energy Podcast. Dragon Shield makes some of the best card gaming and tabletop gaming products and accessories on the market, including sleeves, binders, deck boxes, and so much more. Azul, how many boxes of sleeves did you go through this weekend? Because I know you like to resleeve midday. I like to resleeve before day two, resleeve before top cut. What are we at?
I did not resleeve before top cut, but I did resleeve 3 times. 5 rounds.
By the way,
day 1.
You don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that. Dude, there's some people who don't resleeve ever. Did you see that tweet from that one person who hasn't resleeved in like 5 years? Or they use the same set of sleeves for every tournament. They said it was the sleeves that they used for their first Magic deck, and they haven't broken a sleeve since.
That's so sick.
They were rarely dirty. I would not recommend doing that. It's probably like a, it's like a, what's it called? A biohazard or something at this point. Like,
yeah, we had 2005 decks at the regionals this weekend for like our caster battles and stuff. And like on my retro decks, the sleeves are all pretty much just like old sleeves that I've like used for a couple tournaments, and then I'm like done using them, so I put them on old decks. And one of the decks is sleeved in some of the old yellow glossy Dragon Shields that I've talked about before. That was like the sleeve that I used to use for years back in 2016, 17.
Yeah, even back then, Dragon Shields were like the standard. All the good players back in the day used Dragon Shields, man. They're everyone.
Yeah, for sure. And I was like, standards. But like I use mats now, but it kind of felt nice to like the glossy ones just feel so good to riffle shuffle. They just feel they're so slick, so smooth. And so that felt kind of nice to like actually use those again. It made me think like maybe I need to go pick up a box of glossies or something like that. But I was talking with Puka about it, and Puka was saying how he had a set of he knew someone that had a set of like black glossy Dragon Shields that they had used for like 7 or 8 years, something like that, just like tournament
to
tournament.
Don't break, bro.
Pulled them out, and he said they eventually decided they needed to throw them out because they smelled bad, because they it was like it was time to move on because it had been 7 years and they had just too much gamer sweat on them.
Yeah, even if your Dragon Shields last that long, it's probably at some point you gotta replace.
Yeah, you gotta replace them at some point.
yeah. Well, huge shout out to Dragon Shield for being a sponsor of the podcast as always. I was rocking the tangerines this week. I got to re-up. I got a lot of tangerines to go through this season, so I'll be rocking the tangerines for a little while. So yeah, huge shout out to Dragon Shield as always. Check them out, dragonshield.com/webshop/EU or US, depending on where you're located. And of course, as always, they're available literally everywhere else. Up next, Chip, we got Guess That Flavor Text. It's my turn to pick a card for you to try and guess what Pokemon belongs to the flavor text. So how this works is one of us will pick a card, read the flavor text on the card, and then it's up to the other co-host to try and guess the Pokemon that that flavor text belongs to. The card, I guess, like the card and the Pokemon that it belongs to. You get 4 points if you get it right without using any lifelines. If you use a lifeline, and for each lifeline you use, you lose 1 point. And the lifelines are what set the card is from, what stage the card is, and then read an attack name. Chip, this one seems like I like the flavor text on this one, but I think it's definitely a good shot that you can actually get this one. This feels like one of the ones that you'll be able to like maybe break down, decipher, and get to. So are you ready for your flavor text this week?
Absolutely. Let's get it.
It claws if displeased and purrs when affectionate. Its fickleness is very popular among some.
Its fickleness?
Fickleness. Are you fickle, Chip?
No, I feel like it's purr.
What does it mean to be fickle?
Fickle is like wishy-washy, right? Like you can't decide how you feel one way or the other. Like you go back and forth on decision. Oh, you're indecisive is kind of, I guess, a synonym for fickle, I think.
Changeability, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, immediately, purring and claws, like, it's got to be a cat Pokemon of some sort. It could be Meowth, of course, the OG cat. I'm immediately kind of leaning towards Purloin, though, I feel like. I know the least about the Gen 5 Pokemon, which is... Wait, is Purloin Gen 4? Purloin's Gen 5, I'm pretty sure. I know the least
about...
about the
ones before that? You just like drop off.
Well, those
5?
Are like, so I know a lot about gens 1 through 3, just a little bit about gen 4, or like a decent bit now, I guess, at this point. The least about gen 5, because like gen 5 was out when I was in high school. I was definitely like way too cool to be messing with Pokemon, at least in my own mind, right? And then I went to college and Pokemon X and Y came out and I bought a 3DS and I was like not too cool anymore. So, and from then on, I've played all of the main series games. But anyway. Yeah, Purloin is definitely what I'm leaning towards, and I like part of me just wants to straight up lock it in. I don't really know what I would change my mind on. Let me hear the flavor text just one more time.
It claws if displeased and purrs when affectionate. It's fickle. Its fickleness is very popular among some.
Yeah, I think like
now it's just like. It just sounds like a normal cat.
It does sound like a cat, yeah.
I don't know if anyone is like a fan of like a cat's indecisiveness.
Probably. They just like the cat's personality or whatever, right? And that's like part of it.
It's annoying whenever the cats want to come in the house and they take forever to come into the house.
I do kind of want to use like at least one lifeline to narrow it down a little bit to just feel better. I don't really know what would change that would make me... I guess if it was like a set I knew for a fact this Pokemon wasn't in, or if it was like a Gen 2 or 3 set that I knew Purloin didn't exist yet. So let's go with what set the card is from.
It's from Diamond and Pearl.
Dang it. Glammeow, I guess? Yeah, yeah. I guess it's that one then. The other cat Pokemon. I forgot this existed.
More cats.
But, yeah. Glammeow. It could be Purloin evolves into Liepard. Yeah. Okay. Wait, what does Glammeow evolve into? Wait, does Glammeow evolve into Purloin? Oh, I'm tripping. What does Liepard evolve from? No, that's Purloin. Yeah, I'm tripping. Holy cow. This is normally you. This is...
Well, I wouldn't even be able to guess the names of them. I would like have stopped. Like.
Oh, wait, I'm forgetting what Glammeow... evolves into. Or is Glammeow the stage one? The little gray cat one has a super curly tail. Oh, I'm like tripped up right now. This is rare for me, I feel like. Okay, now I'm way less confident. I'm gonna go with I want to set the card is from. I'm gonna go with read an attack name.
It has charm.
Yeah, I mean it's Glammeow. And does Glammeow evolve into Purugly? Well, wait, why does Purloin not evolve into Purugly? Does Purloin evolve into Purugly? And I'm like tripping myself up. Glammeow into Purugly. Okay, I'm going to go with Glammeow, dude.
Locking it in?
Yeah, lock it in.
Yeah, it is Glammeow.
Okay, dude.
I thought there was a
Does it evolve into Purugly? It does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Wait, so why doesn't Purloin evolve into Purugly? Like that that makes no sense.
Well, it came out afterwards. Purugly came out before Purugly was even or Glammeow and Purugly came out before even Purloin was even a thing.
Which one is it? Is it this one? Oh, there's two the bottom arts one of this card.
Bottom right.
Yeah, there's a promo art though, too. Look at the promo.
Oh yeah, do they don't do that anymore, do they? Where they used to do two arts of the same card in a set?
They do sometimes. It... But when they do, it's got like the alternate symbol in the bottom corner, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there it is. Glammeow with charm. I'm glad that I asked what set the card was from.
Yeah, I was like, that's like the one. If you, as it was developing, I was like, if you don't ask that, then maybe you don't actually get this.
Glammeow into Purugly. Purugly. And then Purloin into Lightbard. Dude, what the heck? I was like pretty sure, but like I was, I just got lost in my own head on that one.
Why does Glammeow evolve into such an ugly Pokemon? Like it is, it's because it's Glammeow, like glamorous, but then there's, it evolves into Purugly.
Purugly, dude, Purugly. Don't say that to Purugly. He's coming for you.
All right. Well, up next, we got to talk about the overall results. We talked about a couple of the players who did well, and we could probably start with their decks at first, to be honest. We could just work our way through the top 8 list. I already talked about my list, so we don't have to talk about that. But yeah, Alexander did end up winning the whole thing, like we mentioned, and was rocking the colorless Lugia, which I guess you could say overall dominated the tournament, right? Would that be fair to say? 4 in top 8?
I think so, yeah. And that's definitely, I think, the big takeaway here. 4 in top 8, and there was only 11 in day 2. Like,
yeah,
it had a reasonable day 1 to day 2 conversion rate. It was like 8% to 8%, so pretty normal. You would normally even expect it to be a little higher. So, like, you could even call its conversion rate low.
Actually, it was interesting. I talked to Brent. And Brent was like, it had the second best out of the top 6, the second best conversion rate. Lost Box went from like 14 to 20, and then Lugia staying from 8 to 8 gave it the second best conversion rate. Everything else went down in percentage.
Let's start by looking at the meta charts, actually.
Oh, yeah,
let's
we can take a look at those.
So this was the day 1 meta share, and this is day 2. So let's start with day 1. We had 14% Lost Box, 14% Charizard, just a little bit more Lost Box than Charizard, 13% on the Maridon, 12% on Gardevoir, 11 on Chiempao, and 8 on Lugia Archeops. Based on our predictions from the episode last week, Lost Box was a decent bit higher. We predicted 10%. It ended up being 14%. We predicted 12% on the Zard. It ended up staying pretty consistent. It was 15 in Peoria. I think we both thought it was going to dip a little bit more than it did. It, you know, 14 to 15 is basically staying the same, right?
Maridon, no top 8s. It's maintained, but still, that's actually like kind of a surprise, I guess. Back-to-back 15% with 0 top 8s.
Yeah, that is definitely kind of surprising. 14. Not what you expect to see from like the most played best deck, quote-unquote, right? And then Maridon stayed at... We predicted 12% and ended up being 13. We actually had joked how we thought that Maridon could be the best or the most played deck. And it wasn't that far. Only 20 more Lost Box players than Maridon players in the tournament. Yeah.
There was a lot of them. Also, Maridon did not have the as powerful of a showing. Of course, Jesse wasn't there to carry it. So lack of Jesse. We'll see if Jesse can change that, I think. I think Jesse is going to Toronto. So maybe Jesse will change that at the next North American regional. But yeah, it was pretty popular. And I have to imagine, like, maybe that's something that'll, like, kind of maintain moving forward. We can actually, like, talk about that while we're here, I guess. We got little regionals this weekend. Like, how much of this do you think changes? Like, looking at this top 6 right here in day 1 from Sacramento, what do you think changes from here to Lille coming up this weekend? I think
Lugia can go up a bit, right?
It has to, right? There's no way it stays at 8%.
It's probably underplayed at 8%, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there was just kind of like a shock at the underperformance of it from Peoria a little bit, I guess. But, you know, the deck proving that it is really that good. And, you know, it just wasn't its tournament at Peoria, I think, more so than anything.
I wonder if there was some scare with the potential of, like, Spiritomb in some decks, right? Like, Spiritomb's pretty good against colorless Lugia. It's definitely
there was a lot
not...
of Spiritomb.
Like, there was definitely still a lot of Spiritomb.
Yeah. But...
I wonder, like, you know what I mean, though? Like, I'm saying, like, I wonder if that's why, like, less people played it. Maybe they're like, well, people are playing Spiritombs. That's, like, annoying to deal with. I don't want to play Lugia if I'm going to have to deal with those all day.
Yeah. I mean, that could have been maybe one of the reasons, but It definitely feels weird for it to drop off that hard and then do this well. But there was more Lost Box, which is pretty good for Lugia decks.
Yeah.
But like Charizard and Maraidon, which are like, I think the Charizard matchup is fine. People say the Maraidon matchup is unfavorable, but I haven't really felt that in my games I've played when I go with Maraidon against Lugia. So to me, that one still feels pretty close. But people talk as if like the Charizard and Maraidon matchup are the tough matchups for Lugia, but those decks stayed the same. I mean, if anything, they're literally the exact same percentage of the meta, right? Because it was 12%, 15%, mm-hmm. Now it's 14, 13 from Peoria to here. And then Lugia just, you know, dominates. So maybe it's just kind of a tournament to tournament type thing.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at the Pokestats data for some of these players, like Alexander, like he played a decent amount of Lost Box decks. He actually played a lot of Urshifus for, you know, how played that deck is. He played four Urshifus, which is a pretty decent matchup, it looks like. I mean, he beat Krekler and Victor in day two.
Yeah. It's definitely a favorable matchup for the Lug.
Yeah. And, but other than that, I mean, it's like a pretty decent variety overall. Played some mirrors, played some Charizard, did lose to the Charizard.
No Maraidons, like, though, I guess.
Yeah, no Maraidons. And this is the funny one. I don't know if you've seen this or not yet.
Yeah, I should talk to Kerr about it there.
Charlie Kerr played 11 Lost Box decks, bro.
Yeah, that is a lot of Lost Zone. Yeah, that's a lot of them. Yeah, I was already talking to him about it at the event. He's like, he's pretty much only played against Lost Zone deck so far at the point that I talked to him after he beat me. That is pretty funny, though.
Yeah. Tied a Mew, tied a Sablezard, which is like, I feel like Sablezard should be easier to beat than like the Turbo Box or Kyogre decks, right?
Yeah, because they don't have any like aggressive option. They can kind of like chain the Zard at the end of the game, which hits pretty hard.
Yeah,
but if it's just hitting to a Snorlax,
Lugia.
Like
yeah,
you just use Lugia early and then you just go into Snorlax's late, there's no good target for the Zard to clean up on. So should definitely be a pretty good one. But it was like you know, anything, it's possible to lose to anything. So
yeah, without a doubt,
too much of a shock to, and it's just a tie, right? So it's not too much of a shock to just see it, to see a tie.
Dorian, who got top four, played against quite a few Gardevoir, it looks like, and that was a solid matchup.
Yeah. I don't know how. Yeah,
beat a couple Charizards as well.
I don't know if any of the Gardevoir players played the Temple of Sinnoh, but hey, like, that's, if you're like, the Lugia players are going to keep taking advantage of it. People are not putting Temple of Sinnoh in the Guardian. I don't think Henry Brand did, or
so,
Tonneson did, neither did Ryan.
And then finally, Dominic here. I think, is Dominic the only one of these four Lugia players that played against a single Maraidon?
Is that, geez.
I think that's true.
I mean,
Charlie played zero. Dorian played against zero. I mean, we don't know what some of the question mark decks are.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, there's less Lugias. I don't even know, how does that even work? But like, the Maraidons are getting stepped on by the Lost Box players. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Zard players as well, to be honest. So they're most likely doing well. So the Colors Lugias that can kind of, you know, dodge some Maraidons early, the later and later into the tournament it goes, the more likely you just aren't going to hit Maraidon, because the Maraidons are kind of getting squished out by everything else. So it's like not that big of a surprise the way it kind of ended up, I guess, overall. For sure.
And then moving from day one into day two, I guess we should just hit the other percentage real quick. So Gardevoir was 12% in day one, Chiempao 11%, Lugia at the 8%. And then in day two, Lost Box, really good conversion rate. And
a lot of them.
This has kind of been normal for day twos. Lost Box has become kind of like the highest percentage day two deck. I mean, that was the case in Worlds, right?
I think it just has to do with the most. There's the highest concentration of the higher skill players are playing Lost Box.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
There's a correlation between people playing Lost Box and being just better players in the Pokemon TCG. So I think that's literally it. If you just gave that to any of the other solid decks in the format, you would see the same higher conversion rate, I think.
And then we saw Charizard at 12, dropping down a little bit. Gardevoir at 11, staying just about the same, right? Or down 1%, I guess. Chiempao down 1%. Maraidon down pretty big.
Yeah.
At 8%. And then Lugia staying the same at 8. Yeah, Brent is right. Second best conversion rate today, too.
Yeah. And it didn't really move. It's still the 6.
At least of the top 6. Now, I know some of the other numbers from like behind the scenes that we talked about and looked at. So I think probably the best actual conversion rate was Rapid Strike Urshifu. It went from 3.4% day one to 7.7 in day two. Like, that's a, you know, pretty big jump.
Yeah, it's feeding off the Maridons and the lost boxes and all that stuff. Yeah, it's definitely like, yeah, it's definitely was like, it felt like a decent meta for the Rapid Strike deck. Some of them were playing the Spirit Tomb, so if you did by accidentally bump into a Mew, most of the Mews were DTE Mews, so you had a pretty solid shot against those as well. And you know, the Spirit Tomb is also like the Lugia matchup is tough for Rapid Strike, so you got the Spirit Tomb in there to give yourself a little bit of a better shot there as well. But yeah, still not a great finish from the Urshifu. But I mean, it's not that long. I mean, Urshifu won Barcelona not that long ago, so like it's had its moment. My big question mark on that for that deck still is like, I don't know how the Charizard matchup goes, to be honest. Seems like it should be favorable overall, but yeah, I'm not super confident in one way or another. I guess
yeah,
you could look
Victor.
at,
It looks like Victor
yeah.
beat three, tied
Tied
one,
one.
and Alex Kreckler beat one, and he only played one.
Yeah, so not a huge sample size. And my guess would be that it is favorable for Rapid Strike because they have so much control over when they draw their prize cards and how many they want to draw, overall, how quickly they want to draw them. So they're not really like giving the Charizard player the one hit KOs as soon as the Charizard player would like, and they can kind of still draw their prize cards at a timely rate. So they have a little bit more control over the prize trade when Charizard gets to do big Charizard things. So
Rough day two for Mr. Kreckler. Pour one out here. 9-0 day
yeah.
one. 1-3-2 day two.
It hit
That's
the
tough.
lugs. They're the lugs right there. You know, got
Yeah.
the tie against Ryan and then lug lost. The Tina lost as well. The Tina's like, I think that's a close matchup. I'm actually not sure how that one actually plays out, to be honest, either. But then another lug to Dorian.
Alex lost to Pram on the Winning Into Worlds play in this matchup.
Yeah. Alex Szymanski, not correctly. For anyone who's listening doesn't know.
No. Oh, it was Alex Szymanski. You're
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
My bad. Yeah,
Still,
Kreckler was doing decent at Worlds, but then he hit you, unfortunately.
yeah. Unfortunately for Kreckler, fortunately for
Yeah.
me. Yeah, but so let's take a look at the day one meta again. I guess because we're going to talk about Lil a little bit. We can look at some of the list specifics in a second here. But while we have this pulled up, what do you think changes from this going into Lil? Like just deck to deck, Lost Box. What are you thinking?
Probably about the same. And if it's any different, it's probably just a little lower, honestly. Maybe
It's
people
definitely
are.
not going up.
Yeah, no. I
Yeah.
don't think anything. I don't think we're in a meta where something's going to be over 15%. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if something was 15%,
Yeah.
maybe 16, right? Like 15, 16, 15, 14. Like, that's all like kind of the same, pretty close. But like, we're not in a 20% meta share deck,
Yeah. How
meta.
separate do you think European meta is from the North American meta? How much of a separation do you think there is? It's not
Not too
much,
much.
right?
Definitely a little bit, but like definitely not as much as maybe there once was, right? We're just in like kind of this new age information sharing, hyper
Yeah.
refinement of lists online and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, but you could definitely look at it and be like, I guess like theoretically, for the European event this week, maybe it would more closely follow the trends of Peoria into Sacramento, except for them, it's like Peoria into their tournament. So it'll more closely look like this than maybe our development for Toronto,
Yeah,
right?
sure.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
would expect Lugia. I mean, Lugia's got to be the hype deck right now. I think that'll maybe deter some people from doing the Lost Box.
Yeah.
And maybe putting the Sinnoh in the Gardevoir. Or to be honest though, I'm pulling for the fellow Lugia enjoyers out there because I've been a huge colorless Lugia stan for a while now. It was really cool, even though I got beat by Alexander. It was really cool to see the deck do well because, like, for me, I've been second guessing like my personal take on stuff this season so far. But I'm like, no, colorless Lugia just feels good. But then I'm like, no one's playing it. It's not doing well at Peoria. Is the deck just bad? Why do I think it's so good? But then seeing it do well is like definitely reassuring for me that like my thought process of the game is still in line with where I feel like I am as a competitor. So to be honest, I'm pulling for the colorless Lugia stands again this week, and I hope all the Guardies leave their Temple of Sinnohs in the binder, and so we can let the Lugia fly once again and get these free dubs against these Guardie players.
Temple
Just
definitely does. Temple
don't bench
definitely
a
does.
second Lugia. Don't bench a second
Temple.
Lugia V. Go
Sure.
ahead.
Temple definitely does do less, though, against the colorless Lugia. It's still
A little bit
good.
less.
You still get to turn off gift energy, right? But
Pretty
like,
good.
their energies still count for something, which sometimes, if you know, all they need is Drapion and Boss, sure, they don't get gift energy to dig for it, but maybe they have Lumineon to dig for it, right? If you're not
I
playing
already KO'd
Spirit.
one of their Archaeops. They're not setting up the Drapion anymore.
Oh,
That
right.
thing's cooked. Yeah,
I
of
forgot
course.
everything goes perfectly every time.
No, but yeah, I think yeah, Lost Box will definitely have to come down, I think, for sure. I can't imagine Zard is staying at the 14%. Like, it's had such bad showings back-to-back weeks. Or are we missing something? And it's like, maybe the European players have that broken Zard. Maybe there's another broken Zard list out there.
We've seen Brazil Zard. Are we going to see EU Zard next?
Yeah, North American doesn't have a Zard deck. We're not
We did kind of see EU Zard at Barcelona, right? With the guy that got top
the
four.
Zone, yeah. The Lost Zone stuff. Yeah, they already had their moment. I was not a big fan of the Lost Zone stuff as the Arvin stuff, to be honest. One deck right that on... I think... This, I feel like this isn't a European deck, you know? Like, I feel like there is a deck. Sometimes it's just, like, not a European deck. And I think Maraidon is probably that deck.
It just doesn't have that EU vibe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Maraidon, it doesn't feel European.
Not British, not part of the European Union. Like, Maraidon's definitely an American.
Yeah. So Maraidon, I could see being, like, falling pretty heavily and being, like, an 8% deck overall. I could definitely see that. I don't know, though. Maybe it'll be pretty similar. Gardevoir, I think, is definitely a European deck. I think we'll see that.
I could
that
see it
still.
Being more, yeah.
I could see it being the most popular deck, yeah.
And looking into day two, like, I think Gardevoir could be a higher conversion rate deck as well.
Yeah, that would be my prediction. Some very very good Gardevoir enjoyers over in Europe. Yeah. Talk about the last one, I guess, here is, like, we expect Lugia to go up, Gardevoir to maybe go up, be the most popular, Maraidon to come down, Charizard to come down a little bit, Lost Box to come down a little bit. Chien Pao, do you think that'll even stay on the top six here?
Or do what would take players, its place? I guess Mew or Urshifu? Like, what do you think takes its place?
Well, do the Mew players take advantage of the lack of Spirit Tomb and Drapion that the Europeans don't like to play? Like, is that...
We're going to have this discussion again.
Is it coming in droves?
Just berating all of Europe for leaving their Drapions at home and letting Mew win every single tournament.
Hey, well, Benji was in my chat earlier. We were talking about it. We're like, hey, Mew seems like a pretty good play. It's a European event. Mew's pretty good. Like, Mew's still in the format. It's a European event. Okay, both boxes are checked. We're running Mew. Let's go.
Yeah, and Mew, you know, I mean, besides the Zard, which you ought to lose to, you can beat everything else. You probably have an unfavorable to most Lost Box decks, especially like Kyogre is pretty bad, but you can beat the other ones.
I think the Turbo you're fine against, but with the way builds are currently, people are cutting Drapion. So, like, it's got a lot better for the Mew. Chien Pao, actually, though, like, speaking of Chien Pao, Chien Pao's, like, steadily gained steam this format, right?
It has.
It was 8% in Peoria, I want to say, from, like, a 5% in Pittsburgh.
Right. Yep, that's right.
Very slowly, steadily gaining steam. So I would, I don't know, but once again, like, it does feel like there's sometimes decks that Europeans just don't play or Americans play more of, whatever way you want to look at it. I don't know if Chien Pao is also maybe one of those. So I feel like Chien Pao will be probably a little bit lower in Lille as well. Maybe not even, maybe it won't be in the top six, but I don't even, but like you said, what takes its place, I guess, would be an interesting question. You come back?
Yeah.
Lost Tina?
Lost Tina is probably the most realistic thing that would pop back up on the Metashare chart. And I could also see that too, honestly. Like,
you did kind of rightfully forget about it, but yeah, it would be the one. Enough people really trying to have an early lunch break.
Oh my gosh.
Roll up with their Lost Tinas. All right, well, yeah. Well, I think we'll talk a little bit more about Lil in a little bit, but let's take a look at some of the lists. Let's take a look at some of the lists out.
Yeah.
Starting, I guess we start with the first place list, right?
Yeah, let's start with Alexander's list. Nothing, like, super crazy here. Did have the Luxray and the Reversal Energy, which are kind of techs that people have known existed. And it feels like you either play Luxray and Reversal, or you play Zard and Luminous.
Well, you'd think that, but the best list in... The best call is Lugia list in top eight, in my opinion, was Dorian's, because not only did it have the Luxray and the Radiant Zard, but it also had four Great Ball, which I'm personally a big fan of.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think you play both. I think Charizard is better than the third Snorlax, actually.
Oh, 3-2 Lugia in this list, though? That's a little crazy, man.
There's four Great Ball, though. You get that's a lot more Pokemon search than average.
That makes it so much better.
No, this is like... very similar to what I was, it's very similar to the list that I was working on pre Sacramento. And it just flowed. I don't know. Dude, Great Balls, I feel like when you get four of them in there,
not it, man.
You're hitting the chops, you're hitting the Luminions, everything's going so much smoother. The only thing I didn't like about Alexander's list was the lack of the Radiant Zard. I'm a big Radiant Zard fan.
I do like the Radiant Zard too.
Especially for the Maraidon matchup. I don't dislike three Snorlax, but I think the Radiant Zard's like a little bit better than the third Snorlax. And then if you want to put the third Snorlax on top of that, like we see here with Dorian's list, then I think that's like fine as well. But I'm a big Radiant Zard stand. I think the Luxray was a good call to continue or to be playing the Luxray this tournament made sense because I mean, Charizard ended up still being really popular. It's really good in the Charizard matchup. Get that Pidgeot one hit KO. It's really good in mirror match as well. So you hit the other Lugias that are doing well. Eventually, we saw quite a few Lugia colors, Lugia mirrors going on, and the Luxray was an impact in some of them. So
yeah, definitely. You know, Luxray is definitely really good in that Lugia mirror match. Alexander did play the Weirdeer, not something that every Lugia player has. Dorian did not have it in their list. But I and you haven't been as big of a fan of the Weirdeer. I know you have said as well that you're kind of coming around to it a little bit, but
it's
I really do like the Weirdeer, and I think it's kind of necessary to include.
I think it's good in mirror match for sure. I think
I think it's good against any of the V stars.
Yeah, it's good against so mirror match. We saw Alexander used it very efficiently against Niccolo in the finals, and Charlie should have used it to more efficiency in the top eight match against Niccolo as well, but definitely made a couple mistakes there that did not lead to the Weirdeer being as effective as it could have. So like specifically, yeah, hitting that matchup actually, like, it's pretty good in that matchup for sure. I think it does have some potential value in the mirror, although it's not like a consistent factor.
It's also like a way you can, you know, if you Drapion one Mew VMAX, you can Weirdeer the next one, right?
Yeah. Definitely could help in the Mew matchup for sure. I guess the most interesting list is definitely Dominic's list, right? I just pulled that up. I actually hadn't looked. I thought I had looked at this list earlier, but I hadn't looked at this one yet. The Ditto, the Squawkabilly, that's probably the two most standout things, right? Ditto and Squawkabilly, yeah.
Yeah, the Ditto is kind of interesting. I don't know
the why flexibility you would of being
play Ditto over a fourth Lugia V.
Because you might want to have a one prize on your active. I think that's what it is. Like, you have a chance. Yeah. But like, what is the chance you open the Ditto?
It definitely
not very high.
Feels not that good. Like, I think it
is it better than the fourth Lugia V though? It probably is, right? I would imagine.
Yeah,
so.
But is it better than the third Snorlax? Maybe not.
That would be the question, right? Yeah, but it does have the Radiant Star in here. Like I said, I'd love to see that before the third Lax every time. But third Lax on top of the Zard is not a bad thing to have either. But yeah, that's the Ditto's interesting.
It was actually pretty funny. I just want to mention this real quick. Dominic played Sawyer Melbourne in top eight. Mm-hmm. And their games were ridiculous because they were both like just joking around with each other the whole time. Like definitely not treating it like a high pressure, you know, big money on the line type situation, which, you know, is fine. You know, you like to see people enjoying it and having fun. But Dominic started, I don't remember exactly what happened. It was like Dominic had a Lugia, just one Lugia V on the bench. Sawyer KO'd it, right?
Yeah.
And then Dominic had all three V star in his hand and a research and no out to Lugia V. So Dominic played research. Dominic hits Luxray. Dominic gets the reversal energy. Somehow put themselves in a like realistic winning position in the game, and it
holy moly, Luxray and Zard the carries.
Yeah, it was literally like Luxray Zard manually power up a Snorlax, like
scrap the squad together.
It was so scrappy, and like I said, they were both like joking around, having fun with it. But you could definitely see a point where Sawyer's demeanor kind of changed in that second game when he was like. It was like was it two prizes, or he went to one prize, I think it was, and Dominic did still have four, but Iono'd to one, and Dominic had like Snorlax on the bench with an energy, Luxray in the active, still had access to Radiant Zard. I don't think had it yet, but like, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter as much when you only have one prize left, but Sawyer like only had one Comfey, sent it up flower selecting, and was like, I think he verbally said, can I lose this? Benches a Comfey, passes, and then Dominic almost wins, but Sawyer ends up finding like a Colrus off the Comfey the next turn to like hit everything to take the last prize. But it would have been one of the most outrageous stories I've ever seen, winning a game two after your Lugia gets KO'd on turn one.
Yeah, with no other Lugia backup getting rid of the three stars. Yeah. It's definitely pretty funny for sure. Okay, so that was definitely the most interesting build of the Lugias. Kerr chose to not rock the Luxray, actually. It was the only one without the Luxray, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So Kerr, no Luxray, did have the weird deer. I guess another interesting count is like the boss's orders count. We saw Dorian and Kerr with the four boss's orders. And
the four is cool.
Yeah, I'm a been a fan. Dominic with the three and Alexander with the three as well. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot. If you're a colorless Lugia enjoyer, you want to pick up some colorless Lugia and start trying it out. There's a lot of lists to take a look at and try out for sure. Try out the different things. You know, they're all there for you to take a look at. The rest of the, I guess, like the second most interesting or the most interesting deck in top eight though was definitely the second place, the finalists. The Arceus Gyarados VMAX. It's not the first time though that there's been Gyarados VMAX in a top eight of a regional. This is actually a good time to use that quote that I see people use way too often, where it's like, it's not impossible, but it's funny it happened twice or whatever.
Is that the one?
Yeah, people use that way too often for way too many things that are not that big of a surprise that they happened twice. But this one was actually kind of a crazy one. The second time Gyarados VMAX we've seen make it, was it Vancouver was the first time from Drew?
Yeah, Bennett Kinnon got top four with it. Someone else got cut with it at that tournament, I think, right? Or am I tripping?
I hope you're tripping. Dude, they're lucky I didn't roll up to
Vancouver. Dude, look at this. Look at this. Arceus Gyarados lists. It got second place. Oh, yeah. Someone got second with it at Lille before Drew got top four with it.
What? Really? I didn't even remember that happening.
Kai Von Wynn.
I don't even remember this happening.
Yep.
At all, to be honest. This is back before European events were relevant, I guess. That's why I don't remember it.
Brother. You said it, not me. Azul does not speak for the entirety of the Uncommon Energy podcast. So I think like the big story out of top eight is definitely the four Lugias, like Lugia dominating 50% of cut. But the most interesting thing in top eight is this deck for sure. And I mean, at its core, it's just like an Arceus path deck, right? Mm. Gyarados and Slaking are just kind of here to, you know, support the crew. And I think I saw on Twitter, Nicolo even made a post saying like, yeah, Gyarados like maybe could be better just like as a Vulpix line instead of Gyarados. Too. But
Slaking.
The Gyarados is good. It's like stuff has answers to Vulpix, right? Gyarados is just hitting hard.
Yep. So I think that's what it was doing in the other build that we saw like Drew and I forget the name of the other player you mentioned, but it was just hitting hard. Yeah. That's what kind of goes there. It's got a lot of HP. It's weak to lightning, but when you play up against anything that has a lightning attacker, you just don't put it in play, obviously. Mm-hmm. It hits hard. And I think one of the strategies they said that they were using was against Charizard specifically. The reason it was good against Charizard is because you judge them or Iono them, and then you use the first attack Hyper Beam to try and buy a turn. Slow them down, do 120 damage, discard an energy from their active Pokemon. The Charizard deck doesn't play a ton of energy, and a lot of them are going into play really aggressively through the ability on Charizard. So you hit them with the judge, put the path in place so they can't use another Charizard, and it's possible they whiff that attack on the next turn. You'll shut down the Pidgeot, shut down the possibility of another Charizard accelerating energy to play. It definitely sounds like it could be played around, though, just by putting a third energy on your Charizard.
That's what I was literally just about to say,
But I don't think anyone was hip to the strategy to apply as a Charizard player against Arceus Gyarados VMAX. So, can't really blame anyone for getting bodied by the Gyarados VMAX.
Yeah, and Nicolo did end up getting second. Of course, this deck is supported by the Beaverel. Does have the Radiant Greninja in here just for a little extra draw power. The Greninja almost is probably the most like out of place card to me, I feel like, in this deck. Like, sure, you get a little bit of extra dig, but you really want path and play from turn two onward with this deck. And sometimes like turn one into turn two, right? So
could help with the potential of the Melanie, like a little bit, right? Like if you don't get the Ultra Ball. Could get there a little bit of extra draw power. I think I saw a tweet from Nicolo as well saying that like had played the Poppy in this before, didn't include it in this build though, going into this regional, I believe. But it was something that was on Nicolo's radar to potentially include, but didn't feel like it was worth it. And that, and this has been like a combo that's been in Arceus decks, not a lot, obviously, because like no one really knows about Arceus decks right now, but this is like a Poppy plus Radiant Greninja is something that people have been playing. You know, since like the beginning of this format, basically. Not that it's like a super mainstream popular thing. Obviously, it's like the first time Arceus done as well, has done well like this whole format, I believe. Besides like Arceus Charizard did okay, but that's not really an Arceus deck, I feel like. The Poppy allows you to just move two energy from one of your Pokemon to another of your Pokemon. So you use Arceus, you accelerate three energy to one of your V Pokemon, and then you hard retreat the double turbo or switch into the Greninja, attach the Greninja, Poppy the energy over, and then use Red Ink Greninja to Moonlight Shuriken a couple comb fees or something, or Ralts or Curlias, whatever it might be.
Yeah, because who's going to bench their Manaphy's against an Arceus deck, right? Yeah, it's definitely a cool play, and I could see, you know, it's probably worth including for the style points alone, right?
Yeah, one thing I was trying to figure out, like the Vengeful Punch in here, it's good against Guardy. Some weird situations can come up where it's good. What is the Defiance Band specifically for? What is that responding to? What is that? Where are you 270, getting
270, 260, 290 with the slacking?
Yeah, against, but it will be against like EXs and like non.
Yeah,
that one I couldn't quite.
Yeah,
I don't know. It feels like Choice Belt fills the role for any damage buffs you'd need. What EXs are in the format though?
Gardevoir, Maridon.
Oh, what about slacking the KO Pidgeot?
It does allow slacking to KO Pidgeot. Yeah, and maybe
that's it.
Maybe that
that's
is
something.
You can set up those plays, of course, with Starbirth.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I guess Gardevoir could help.
And this is like a deck, too, where you can theoretically save Starbirth. You don't usually want to, though, because you want to be putting Path in play, right?
Yeah. Well, sometimes if your opponent's not bumping, you also play the Vacuum yourself. But if no one's, if they're not, in a lot of matchups, if they're not bumping your path, you're winning. So if they bump your path, you just get to use Starbirth. But if they're not, then you're winning anyways.
So, like, if you get, like, a turn three Starbirth, you can set up some cool things with, like, Boss's Orders slacking, probably. Boss's Orders Gyarados somewhere along the way. But, yeah, this is definitely the most unique deck in cut. There was also, while we're talking just about Arceus decks, Braden Elfert ended up getting ninth place with an Arceus Duraludon deck. Braden, I think, in Peoria, played Arceus Vulpix. So, you know, Braden has been an Arceus enjoyer for a while. He won a regionals in 2022 with Arceus Duraludon.
Big time Arcanoia.
This is a pretty interesting list. Had the Beedrill Squovit engine, had the Radiant Alakazam, and also had Mawile, but not just one, two Mawile Azul.
You gotta have the two Mawile. Like, it would be, the deck would be incomplete without the second Mawile for sure. Yeah, trying to do some shenanigans up against Lugia decks. Guard even has Echoing Horn in there to not only do like some, you know, put your Luminion back in play type plays, but probably also to abuse Mawile, I would assume, more so than anything. You can also do cheesy stuff, honestly, against Maridon, where you like bring up one of their Pokemon that doesn't have any energy on it. Because Maridon plays a couple switch cards, but not like a whole ton. Yeah. And you like Mawile trap it for a turn, and then you go into Arceus, and then you Arceus KO it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that's, because the Maridon's pretty tough if you don't like turn one path cheese them, to be honest.
So
for Arceus,
I saw
decks.
Brayden put on Twitter the reason for the Mawile, and it's against Charizard specifically. So like if they use or start their Mew, they have one escape rope, so they can escape rope get out of the Mawile and then KO the Mawile, and then you hit them with the second Mawile.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then what?
And then
what
then
if they
you
don't
Mawile
open
them?
Mew? And if they don't open Mew?
Well. Who would expect the second Mawile?
Yeah, worry, our Mew is safe. There's no way they have two Mawiles. There's even a Super Rod in there. Third Mawile. Yeah, Brady goes up against the player playing two switch cards. Or they still have the what is it called? Penny in the list. They still got the Penny escape rope.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, cool. Third Mawile. Nice try, Charizard. But to be honest, if you're not taking prize cards, it's not like any of your stuff's getting KO'd too aggressively. They can only take like one prize knockouts. So
right, that's true.
Yeah, you're just not going to draw prize cards, I assume, in that matchup, and you just go for the Mawile cheese,
and then
no,
like,
Squovet
against Lugia. You just got to set the Duraludon up.
yeah, you just get the Duraludon set up, and
you
just
win
the game.
If you do that, you win.
The Guardy matchup is tough as well, so I'm sure the Mawile is a pretty big help in that one. But you have Path. You have Path, my Iono. Only three Path though, which is actually interesting to see because that's
like the core 20, of the deck.
That's like 25% less path than you could be having, which doesn't sound correct. I feel like you
the
could
Alakazam
have
is kind of interesting. You know, Arceus isn't one hit KOing, you know, any big guys, but it's also not, it's over two hit KOing them. So
yeah,
it can just let you save some damage in play. I can't think of any other specific reason to play the Alakazam.
Got to be for Guardy. Like, it's got to be the main value you're gaining, I would assume.
Yeah, or like if the Lost Box attacks with Dragonite, right?
Yeah. So maybe for the Lost Box matchup as well, because you don't have like that great of a Lost Box matchup. I guess if the two Charons cares, so you're probably fine against Lost Box.
Yeah.
But then even against, I was gonna say one more thing about Lost. Oh, against even Maridon, to be honest, like you don't want to KO the Maridons, so you can move some damage off to it KO, and then move the damage to the next Pokemon. So it probably is a little bit helpful against the Maridon matchup. You do have the Duraludon, of course, that can one hit KO. But But when they get the bravery charms and stuff, that sounds annoying. I don't know. Ooh, but you could Mawile. If they attack with a Maraidon, you could Mawile it. So they can't retreat to a new attacker.
And then you Arceus it.
Yeah. I'm saying, man.
Dude, easy matchup. The plays with this deck are absolutely insane. And then we did have two Lost Box decks in top eight. Two Kyogre decks yourself. We already talked about your deck this weekend. Of course, played the Raymond Long, you know, Kyogre, Zamazenta, Pidgeot V build. And then Sawyer cool played deck. The
two prize ogre.
Same list that he got day two in Peoria with, and probably just a card or two different than the top 16 list he had from Pittsburgh, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing. The only thing that stood out to me was there's only one recycler, but there is four super rods. So, like,
yeah.
You can still make it work with rods, even if you use a recycler. But besides that, it is just kind of like the two prize ogre. Nothing too wild. And the last, yeah, it was the Guardy, right? It's the last list we have to take a look at here. The Guardy from Ryan. And this one was interesting. This is kind of like almost like a mix of like if we have to like call out two lists that I've seen before in the past, it's kind of similar to like the Brent Tonneson list, but then has like some other stuff from like Brent Tonneson's list from Peoria. But then you see the vacuum in here over like the second worker, third boss, which I'm personally a big fan of, like the three boss. Like, I don't understand how the Australians can only play two boss. Sometimes you want a boss a third time. Like, how are you supposed to do that if you don't play three?
Yeah.
And then went with the Spirit Tomb. This is like the one list in top eight that did have the Spirit Tomb. But in my first seven rounds of the tournament, I believe I played against five decks that had Spirit Tomb in it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They were out there, man. They were.
I bet you're glad that you guys didn't end up on Mew, huh?
Yeah, but definitely for the best. For the best for sure that we didn't end up on Mew. We did talk about it for a little bit. The idea of playing Mew is always cool, especially like the Grabber Luxray build, the Handlock Mew is kind of cool. But yeah, nothing too crazy with the Guardy list either, right? Just like, I guess like the big difference between the Guardy builds is just like, is it just like Palpad versus no Palpad? I feel like that's it. Like, you either play the Palpad or you don't play the Palpad.
I'm a fan of Palpad.
I guess Force Seal Stone, no Force Seal Stone this as well. This is what stood out to me as well, as like when I drew the parallel to like the Brent list, was the no Force Seal Stone at all.
Yeah.
I don't know, third boss, but usually you're Palpadding back in boss. So I kind of get the idea of just like,
but do you not want the
boss
flexibility of being able to Palpad in an Iona if you need it, or
it's definitely
boss?
less relevant when you don't play the research as well, I guess. If you're not doing the research, yeah, nothing too wild here in the Guardy build either. Besides the Spirit Tomb, I guess, like, it's like the standout card was the Spirit Tomb for sure. But
yeah,
good old Guardy.
Sure. Any other day two lists you want to talk about? You know, we've got a couple of Lost Boxes in top 16. We got a Maraidon, Grand Chin with the Chi and Pao once again, Victor on the Urshifu. Let's look at the Urshifu, I guess. His and Krekler's list. So he did have the Squawkabilly in here.
Yeah, so I think both
Thornton
of them
as well.
Yeah, both of their lists are pretty close to the ninth place list from Barcelona. So I think that's who we can reference as the kind of driving force behind this more aggressive build. No Iridas, I believe, but they have the. Oh, actually, no, I think maybe Krekler did play the Iridas still. Oh, so the Victor build is closer to the Barcelona list, but no, the Krekler's build is very similar to what Krekler played at Worlds, actually, I think.
Yeah. Had the Spirit Tomb, doesn't have the Squawkabilly.
Yeah, yeah.
No Thornton or anything like that.
Yeah. But Victor's playing the more aggressive build. More researches, more battle VIP passes. The Thornton. Yeah, nothing too crazy in these ones either, to be honest. Everyone keeps playing the Echoing Horn, but I don't think I've ever used that card whenever I played the deck. What are we horning? What are we putting on their bench?
Ralts.
The thing is, it's like so easy to grab, so it kind of makes you want to play because you can literally artillery for it. Yeah, I think I've never used the card whenever I played Rapid Strike. It's always just sat in the deck.
There were definitely a handful of kind of cool decks in day two. I think one of the big standouts to me was Brandon Jones with the Hisuian Zork V-Star. What did you think of this deck?
It's interesting. I meant to actually give it a shot and try it out sooner, because actually Jesse Parker sent me a list that looked very similar to this. The four Clef Keys, you hit and run with the Zoroark for a little bit to get ahead against Lost Box and stuff like that. It was definitely, yeah, so I had seen something similar to this before, so it was intriguing. Did the gloves let you one hit KO with Charizard, right?
If you have two basic psychic on your Zoroark.
Wait, what?
Okay, you do 3-10 with a double turbo energy. So you need 2 basic psychic energy. Are you doing the actually? Math? Yeah.
Oh, well, we have Alakazam, though, so we can move a little bit of early damage around, I guess, right?
Alakazam can help you. That is
true. I guess, yeah. I was like, you're never beating Charizard. I still don't know if you are beating Charizard, to be honest, but no, it's kind of cool. Hisuian Zoroark never really had its moment, to be honest. I feel like the meta was always too diverse for it. It was waiting for to be the ultimate beat stick deck, but the meta never really came around for Hisuian Zoroark. But it's cool to see it still make a day two here and there. I don't think I'm tripping. Is there a Regis in day two? Yes.
Yep. Don't worry. Already have it pulled up.
I literally had to do a double take when I walked past. I don't know the name of the person who played this, but I literally walked past them playing it, and then I like stopped and I went, took a couple steps back and looked again. I was like, "Yep, that's Regis."
It sure was. Yeah, this was kind of cool. This was actually on the. this is why with the stream, I kind of wish we could put like the decks in there somehow for like people to vote for the community choice, because this was on the winning end. We knew about it, but on the winning end, I mean, I think, yeah. No, not to top eight, to day two.
Oh, how did you guys not put this on?
Well, we had Jeremy versus Henry, which was like pretty good too.
I think Reggie's trumps. Sorry, Henry. I know you're
world champ, but... It wasn't our choice. It was the community's choice. They picked that game, you know?
But they only see the names, right? Not the decks.
That's true.
And I think everyone, to be honest with that, I think everyone wants to see the decks, not the names, which I think is fair. I want to know the matchups.
I don't know that. I think it depends, right? I think people want to see Henry.
I want to see Reggie's. Henry's, you just have to hold. Henry, you're gonna have to hold this L. You'll get your chance on the stream again. We want to see the Reggie's. All right, we'll get you next time. The Reggie's are here though. No, that's fair. Like I would want to. Like I say that all the time. Like when I tune into a European stream, like when I'm not streaming it myself, if there's two players, I just don't recognize the names and I just kind of tune out. I'm not gonna lie. So, but when there's that one known name, or if there's a cool deck, to be honest, if there is like a Reggie's, I'm gonna stick around and see what's up.
Yeah. And then one more. This deck did get on stream in day one. I guess we have 2 more to talk about. Let's start with the one that I was about to talk about. They got on stream day one, and that is Block Snorlax. And that is it. That is the deck. It is 4 Block Snorlax, the Mimikyu, Serena, Rotom, and the Crab.
The Millum.
So way better with Power Catcher. Made day two, but I think he only showed up to like the first round. I think he had like a noon flight. So he went to the first round of day two, lost the first round, and then dropped.
Just did not want to go through it. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't blame him. The deck's not very good. I'm not going to lie. Block Snorlax is not it in the current meta. It's still a fun deck. It's insanely fun to just like play control decks because they play so differently than everything else. And, you know, getting day two with it is pretty sick, to be honest.
And then
it'll be a tough climb for sure.
We do got a good old Ting Lu deck in day two. Also, did not do very well.
That's what you'd expect. To be honest, when I have played Ting Lu in the past, though, it feels like it could be there. I don't know what is. I mean, I think Jose was pretty close to day twoing at NAIC with Ting Lu.
Yeah, he lost the winning into double canceling Cologne.
Oh, yeah.
Double canceling Cologne back Excalibur.
Genius. Yeah, because it's not that the deck's pretty consistent overall. Like you get the turn one Koridon play pretty often, start locking out their abilities. But yeah, then like as the game progresses, if they just literally get any attacker set up, it starts to fall apart. But it's close. It's definitely close.
Yeah, if only your opponent like had a worse deck.
Yeah, can you just like play a worse deck against me, please?
Can you play Block Snorlax? Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's cool always to fun those... to just kind of look at the wacky stuff that makes day two because, you know, it's a thing to show as well for people. Like, you don't have to play a tier one meta deck at a Pokemon tournament. If you want to make top eight, you probably should play a tier one meta deck, right?
But unless you do have a broken wacky deck, like a wacky deck isn't good enough. But you got the broken wacky, then then it could happen for sure. But yeah, it is still cool. It's always cool to see like the Regis. Like, yeah, right. It was sick to see the Regis in the day two. Ting Lu made it, which is cool as well. It would be a really tough climb for any of those decks to push for like, you know, a top eight or anything like that. But it's always cool to see them still show up. It shows they're still like, I mean, even if, you know, some people might say it's a, bad thing that bad decks do well. It's cool to bad decks being able to like compete with top decks to an extent, I think, is something that should exist in the Pokemon TCG.
Agreed.
It's nice to get on ladder and like be able to beat top tier meta
decks. Well, because usually too, as the person playing the quote unquote bad deck, you have to like play a lot better and work a lot harder to beat like the good deck, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you get like a super rewarding experience, more chance of skill expression. Definitely. Well, we did make some predictions before Sacramento, and we can recap them now to see how we did. We had an over under set at 250.5 on the championship points of the winner before their win. I took the over. Azul took the under, betting on himself, which kind of came close. He made top eight. Yeah. And I actually don't know for sure, but I would imagine, you know, Alexander Flatos probably did not have over 250 points before the event, because we had not seen him in either of the other regionals.
Alexander could be a local grinder, though.
Yeah, like, I'm going to see if know. I can.
A local demon.
I'm going to look up the leaderboard real quick, because his points should be uploaded now, so we should see his name up there.
Have they been uploading that fast? I have not checked like the leaderboards in so long.
Yeah, they've been updating pretty fast, which is cool.
Also, it seems like they're like paying out people faster as well, in terms of like money payout. I think people are already getting paid off for like Pittsburgh and Peoria. Like that stuff usually sometimes takes months to actually happen. So it's cool to see that being happening more aggressively. It doesn't really make any sense why it wouldn't. It's just like, just you're just sending someone money. Like you have the money.
Right.
Just send them the money, you know?
Alexander Flatos has 206 championship points right now.
You get 200 for winning, right?
Yeah. So that means he got like top eight at a challenge. Yeah.
That's it. That's all I needed to hear. That's a dub for me on the under.
Let's go. And he has his World's invite. Congratulations, Alexander. Super dope. All right. Highest placing lost Tina. We were both pretty wrong on this one. I was technically a little closer, but like, I'm not going to give myself any credit for this one, because you took the 128. I took the top 64. And the real answer was top 16. Top 16. Pretty good showing for the lost Tina.
They had to have drawn so hot. It's an absurd. They played any other deck, they would have won the tournament twice, I'm telling you. There's no way. And then the last prediction, we had highest placing non-meta chart deck. I picked Arceus Picks, which was pretty close.
Yeah.
A couple of Arceus. I was like Arceus
different water
stuff.
Type Pokemon, buddy.
So I should have just said like Arceus stuff, like a stuff. Because we had Brayden with the Duraludon. We had Niccolo with the Gyarados VMAX. So I was talking about the picks as well, the Vulpix.
Should have just played talking the about picks. It isn't good enough, because we got Victorong with the Urshifu. And honestly, like, one of those guys definitely should have made top eight, bro. Victor.
Yeah, that was actually kind of crazy. I literally thought I was going to get bodied. I was like, there's no way I can top eight this tournament, because there's Victor and Krekler up here playing.
And then they just kept losing through day two. They both. Yeah, like Victor cool. started 10-1-1, I think, and then like tied two, lost one to whiff top eight. It's crazy.
Love to see it. Love to see it, to be honest.
And that was all of our predictions. So for Lil this weekend, we kind of talked about MetaShare stuff, like what we think will or won't change.
We haven't done this in a while. What would you play? Top two decks. What would you have done this in a while?
I was literally just thinking the exact same thing. I was just thinking, like, Azul, what would you play if you were playing this weekend?
Top two meta decks you would not play.
I would not play. Well, I would not play Maridon.
Ooh,
because
okay.
It doesn't beat anything.
Let's put a goal behind it. Well, that's not true. Let's beat some things.
It doesn't beat much. So Maridon's strength comes from the fact that it's uber consistent and it can disrupt your opponent, and you like have Path to Peak. So you disrupt through Path and Judge and all that stuff, and you're super strong. So like you win games in unfavorable matchups because your deck
is
just
unfavorable matchup,
powerful.
Though. Huh? That means... all that matters is your win percentage against the deck. And if you're winning games in that way, that's like, you don't like the deck because you feel like when your opponent sets up, you're not winning. That's what you should say. But that doesn't mean it has an unfavorable matchup against that deck. That makes sense?
Sure.
Yeah. The only thing that matters is win percentage. So if you're winning 50% of the time, even if you're cheesing them, if it feels like you're cheesing them 50% of the time, that's still a 50% win rate. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I'm just saying what I'm saying is like where Maridon picks up its win rate. Is from those, Jeez. Like, that's how it gets there. Yeah.
It doesn't feel good. I also think Maraudon generally,
I think, like, to do
meta,
well with Maraudon, like, and also, like, I think it does fine at capitalizing off of, like, mistakes from your opponent as well,
because it's pretty straightforward, pretty aggressive.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I also, one of my problems with Maraudon, now that we're talking about Maraudon, is that, like, I feel like the decks that the best players choose to play generally beat Maraudon pretty heavily. So that's why I'm not a big fan. The Lost Boxes, the Guardies, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's, like, going to be hard for Maraudon to win an event, because once it gets to really top eight, hard, it's going to hit something, the Lost Box, usually, or the Guardy, like, Fusion Mew.
All right, so what's the second deck you would not play? Out of, like, the top, you know, eight meta, like, actual meta decks, so, like, not Arceus decks or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely Maraudon, like I said. Maybe Gardevoir, just because of the time stuff, the tying.
Even Chitauri?
A little bit less experience with it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, what about you?
You're kind of convinced me on the Maraudon. Well, Lost Tina for sure
would be, well, one of them. Well, it's not a six meta share deck, though. Top six.
Out of this top six you want to do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Top six.
Ooh, okay. I like that more than that. That's actually a good idea. So what were... Hey, let me pull this up on my...
We got Lost Box, Charizard, yeah, yeah, Maraudon, Guardi, Chiempao, Lugia.
Ooh, okay, then...
Like, I would be pretty happy if I ended up playing a Lost Box deck, a Charizard deck, Chiempao, or Lugia, to be honest.
I think I'm with you, then. I wouldn't want to play Maraudon or Gardevoir out of those six either. Like, I'm with you. If I'm not gonna... If I'm, yeah, if we're picking
so
two decks out of
the... So you called Gardevoir
six,
the tier S deck of this format for a while now. Has your opinion on that changed?
Yeah, I think based on the format, best out of 350 minutes, it's mm-hmm. not... It is still the tier S deck, like, in terms of, it is the most powerful deck. It does have the best matchup spread.
Tournament rules.
Specifically into Lil, though, I don't know, maybe I would give it the best deck. I don't know, maybe not. The Colorless Lugia deck is just kind of fine against Gardevoir, and no one's going to include the Sinnoh. But like I said, I'd be talking about if I would include the Sinnoh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I'm not feeling Gardevoir anymore. I think it is an A tier deck alongside some other decks now. We have no S tier in the format anymore. That's my take. Yeah, I don't think Gardevoir is just, like, if you could sit down and play three games against people, Gardevoir would be the S tier deck. But because of that, and because of the Colorless Lugia matchup being pretty fine for Colorless Lugia, I would probably say it's another A tier deck alongside some of the rest now. But I think I would agree with you. Those would be the two I wouldn't want to play. Chiempao is pretty sick. Colorless Lugia is pretty sick. Charizard's cool. It's missing. Oh, I mean, I guess it had its finish at the Latin American event, but it's missing a finish after that, after it got really popular. And then, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to play Lost Box this weekend, to be honest. So I'm going to go Lost Box and Guardi, actually. I'd rather play Maraudon over both those, I think. Yeah, I'm not, right, I wouldn't want to play Lost Box.
Let's do some predictions for Lil this weekend. So the first one we have is, will a non-European make top eight? Lots of countries in Europe, but... lots of countries outside of Europe. We're going to see a Brazilian up there, Australian, American getting over
I'm
there.
I'm sure some Americans are going. I know Brent Tonneson's going. I don't know if anyone from Latin America is going. But you know what? I'm going to go with yes. Someone's going to go into Europe, steal some championship points, take their pounds, and dip.
No shots. I say it ain't happening. There's just not enough
this,
of them.
Brent.
And there might have been more. There might have been more, but they couldn't register for the tournament because it can't.
That's true. I would have had a better chance, maybe. Next one, let's do the highest placing Arceus deck. Just got second.
Yeah.
Ninth place from Brayden.
Yep.
There's a million ways to play it.
Arceus is in as decent of a spot right now as it has been in. I think it's got a not great Maraudon matchup for the most part. It has a not great Lost Tina matchup, but that's down in play. It probably
doesn't
have
to be 0-3 to play against
matchup. Mew is pretty down in play as well. So those things being considered, it's probably the best time to play an Arceus deck. Maybe Sacramento was the best time to play an Arceus deck. It might be a little worse.
What do you think would change? Like, what do you think is the... did anything really shift?
Maybe if Lost Tina is like a little more, like, just because we said Lost Tina could be more popular over there.
Yeah. Lost Boxes were really popular as well. Right?
Yeah.
And those were, I think that is generally
a
good
Arceus. I think you are okay against Lost Boxes. Like, most of the Arceus decks had like Chariot's Care type things and stuff.
No,
right?
Exactly. So, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would probably go something more similar to Brayden's deck. Probably actually a cross between Brayden and Nicolo's deck. I don't know if I'm doing the double Mawile cheese, but I think I'm taking some free wins against Lugias with the Duraludon, you know?
Yeah, the Duraludon seems pretty nice. There's going to be a little bit of hype behind the Lugia. Do you think You think Lugia should adjust for that though? Actually, now that we're kind of like, what would you even do?
What can colorless Lugia do?
Path, bring the paths back. We've seen that before.
Yeah, that's Mew the can list copy that the Gabriel shred attack. Fernandez won worlds with in seniors.
Yeah, exactly. Mew can copy the Duraludon to shred it once. So you only need one path plus the Mew. Double Mew.
Double path.
Double path. Double Mew. Double Mews. Path.
More Mews. Basic Mew. Fire energy for your Radiant Charizard.
All right, now we're cooking. Okay, we're getting somewhere.
I'm going to go with a top 16 finish.
Oof, that seems pretty solid. I think there probably will be one in top 16. But I'm going to need a little bit more from them. I'm going with the top 8. To be honest, I was like trying to think of a European player who plays Arceus decks that I know, and there's like none of them. So I was about to be like, I'm believing, Brent Tonneson, come through, put the Guardi down, pick not up an happening. Arceus deck. You get the 2-for-1, the non-European Australian player playing an Arceus deck to top 8.
You really don't see even like top players that often changing decks between tournaments.
Yeah, not really.
No. It happens, right? I mean, like, you do that a decent bit. Like, we'll change decks within a format. But, like, Tord, he stuck with Gardevoir since EUIC, really. Brent's stuck with Gardevoir since NAIC. You just don't really see it quite as often. People, like, kind of find what they're comfortable with and stick with it. Lost Box players stick with the Lost Box, right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a merit of the format. Like, a lot of stuff is just
good.
Good, exactly.
Yeah.
It's hard to justify wanting to put something down if it's like been good for you, right?
Yeah, how's it going to be any better than the next good deck, you know? If you ever can find like a loophole in a meta, you definitely want to take advantage of it. Or not a loophole, but a gap in the meta to like take advantage of, you know, something like some weird like Mawile Cheese, something like that, like what Brayden had, like, but maybe you have to put down a different deck to be able to abuse it. And that's like a time to make a move. But it's hard. It's hard when the meta is so wide. It's hard to take advantage of that, right?
And then this last prediction, kind of a different one here. We've got an over under set at 3.5, over under 3.5 Radiant Greninja in top 8. There's a lot of decks that play Radiant Greninja, but there's also a lot that do not include it. I mean, I guess the main ones is just Lost Box and Chien Pao that do play it, right? And Gardevoir.
Yeah.
Can't forget Gardevoir. But then, we got the Charizards, we've got the Lugias, we've got the Mews. Like, these decks do not play Radiant Greninja. Over under 3.5, Azul, what do you think?
Well, if I'm assuming there's an Arceus deck in top 8, but are they going to copy Niccolo and have the Radiant Greninja?
No guarantees, right, brother?
I do like the Brayden build a little bit better, so I think I'm going to go under on the 3.5.
Ooh.
I'm expecting an Arceus deck that does not play it to be in there, so.
Yeah, I'm taking
let's go again.
3.5. There's just, Lost Box is going to be really popular, like.
Ardvor.
Yeah.
And also in this one, I guess if Brent is the only person I can think of that I'm rooting for to make the top 8, I'm already putting a Greninja in the top 8. So I'm kind of got conflicting conflicting predictions here, but I'm hoping for the best. So we get someone in there to get top 8 with Arceus. Brent doesn't play Radiant Greninja in Gardevoir. I don't know what you're playing, Brent, but take out the Greninja.
He doesn't want to play Gardevoir so it doesn't get copied by Mew EX. That's the...
Yeah, so you don't play your own Greninja. Genius. So what would you play? What Radiant would you add to your Gardevoir? Serena?
Do you have to play one?
No, technically not. It's on the rule book. You could go no Radiant. Wait, what if they ever came out with like what if they came out with a one-up card?
Here you go, here you go. All right, no. Here you go.
All right, go.
We play Gardevoir with a 1 Radiant Eternatus and 1 Duraludon VMAX.
Ooh. Why don't we just play a Temple of Sinnoh, though? Why are we... play 2 Temple of Sinnoh with all that effort. We could just play 2 Temple of Sinnoh. All right, but I like it though. Try it out, Brent. See if it's good enough. Cut the Radiant Greninja.
Radiant Vikavolt.
So I can win these.
Or no, Charge-a-Bug. Vikavolt.
Dude, that thing was so bad. That's probably the worst Radiant Pokemon. Yeah, the Steelix, I think, is better.
Not good.
When you attach energy to a V Pokemon, when you're
what's the
does.
Worst one you could play in Gardevoir though?
Worst.
Like, Radiant Venusaur would be terrible.
Radiant Steelix.
Radiant, no. Well, I mean, I guess any of them that you can't attack with would be the worst, right?
Yeah. Radiant Gardevoir would be pretty bad. Well, no, you reduce the damage you take from
Pokemon. No, Radiant Gardevoir would be fine. I said Radiant Venusaur.
Venusaur?
Yeah, you never have less than 4 cards in your hand.
Yeah. That would be pretty bad. Like, yeah, my Ono come back. Oh, no, because he's at the end of your turn.
Yeah, exactly. Like... Venusaur is so bad, man.
It's so bad. Venusaur's not great. Venusaur was hoping for some good one prize Pokemon to go with it, but they never came.
Well, Azul, I think that's it for our episode this week. Thanks so much to everyone for listening and supporting. And if you want to continue to show your support, the best way to do it is to leave us a rating, a review. It's the easiest and fastest thing you could do to help us out. Interact with us over here on the YouTube channel if you're watching. And if you want to stay up to date with myself and Azul, you can follow us over on Twitter at ChipRichie, at Azul_GG, or at Uncommon_Energy.
Appreciate the support as always. Catch y'all next week. Should be back to the regular schedule on Tuesday at 7 a.m. Eastern.
And of course, stay tuned for the bonus episode if you are a Patreon supporter.